that was some fuckery.
Locked in the bunker, shadows shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake. In your bunker, board games rolling. One man clapping, stories growing. Hard rock thunder, speakers blowing. Clapping loud, the unknown sound.
Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. It's Sunday morning. When I say morning, think of a time starting with the number 4. Jesus, holy moly, mother of God. Oh, today represents a glorious return to form. 7 long, dry weeks. I was going to start today off with an apology because I'm a good Canadian boy, but I'm not going to. I'm going to take another route and just give you a little bit of a narrative because my life got a little bit upended about 7 weeks ago. Because of my own choices, you know, hashtag life choices, I resigned my job. Not because I didn't like it. I loved my job. But I resigned my job because the commute was a fucking hate crime. It was a great job, 2 hours each way, a 9-hour workday, man. I was out of the house for 13 weeks, and the peanut sat me down one day and said, "Hey, Dad, you know I play netball on Saturday, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." "You tell me why you're never there." And I'm like, "Oh, God." Didn't have a good answer. She's like, "You know that meal we have at night at the table together as a family?" And I said, "Yes, we call that dinner." And she said, "Yeah. You know, you're not often there. And also, Mom's cooking's not great." I'm like, "Oh, God." So, tough decision. Sat down with my bosses and said, "Look, here's the situation. I need to stop working here because reasons." And they were amazing. They were so, so good about it. They're like, "James, we totally understand. We love your work. We're absolutely gutted. We're disappointed. You're dead to us now." No, they didn't do that. I gave them 3 months' notice and helped them find my replacement. And huzzah, was free to sort of rejoin my family. Also, I may sound like I've been chain smoking for the last little while. We'll get to that. It's that sultry, sexy bedtime voice. You know, if you're listening, Sonia, this is for you. Anyway, we'll get to Sonia as well. And so I resigned my job and I had this gap. I was thinking about getting a new job, was looking around, was scouting around, but I had a gap in Super Trooper. School holidays coming up in Australia. Oh man, school holidays. And Super Trooper has every school holiday off because he has the kind of job where he just has uncapped vacation time. I'm not going to get into the nuts of that, but it's amazing. And so we had a whole week planned of ATO, bonus content, recording, heavy Euros. Our two kids, you know, the Peanut and Beelzebubbles, were going to just go off and do whatever they do. We don't know. We just turn them loose and we put a plate of sandwiches out and we see them 7 hours later. We're trying to raise them Gen X style, you know, where we just put the hose out and say, "We'll see you at nighttime." And then my old employer got wind that I was free because I've got a great relationship with every employer I leave. And they called and said, "Hey, we heard you might be available." I'm like, "Oh, I'm not really." And they're like, "We're going to pay you a shit ton of money to come do what we need you to do." I'm like, "Okay, fuck it." Like, the board game account could use a top up. So I did a week of, almost interstate. It was regional work for this amazing company. People I love again, because I only take jobs for companies that I respect, working for people I like, doing jobs that make me happy. And there are reasons you move on from a job. So anyway, I did a week with them. But in the interim, I pulled up, you know, the Google and I thought, well, I'm off work. What do flights look like to Canada? They were pretty reasonable because normally a flight to Canada from Australia is 3 kidneys and half your liver and your next child, you know. And I said to the fox, "Hey, you know, airfares are pretty reasonable." And this was just a dart at the wall. I'm like, "This isn't going to work, but I'm going to ask anyway." "Now, Dad, how do you feel about popping over to see my parents?" And she was like, "Fuck yeah, let's go." She has the kind of job that's really flexible. And she's like, "Let's go." So we basically went from not having a plan to having tickets booked to Canada. We went to Canada for 3 weeks. So I did this week of interstate work, which was 15 hours a day. And then PlayCon, which was amazing. And we'll get to PlayCon as well. Thank you, Board Game Barbecue Team, for PlayCon this year. It was an absolute triumph, as it was last year. And after PlayCon, which was board games for 13 hours a day for 3 days straight, I got on a plane and I flew to Canada. And I was in Canada for 3 weeks. And if you can believe it, I had the whole kit. I had the laptop and the microphone and the headphones and all the bits packed up. I thought, you know what? I said, Super Trooper, here's a kit. Here's a webcam. Here's a mic. Let's do some recording when I'm overseas. Did we record anything when I was overseas? No, we did not. Spoiler alert, as you may or may not know, if you've been following us or if you've gone, fuck, One Man Clapping's disappeared. Let's delete him from my playlist. Did not record anything. All the best of intentions. I thought this would be great. I've got free time with my parents. The sun's up at 4:30. It sets at 10:30. It was summertime. And we just spent the whole time outside, right? It was just amazing. And then 3 weeks later, let's get back on the plane. It was the Fox, the Peanut, and I. So traveling internationally with a 10-year-old is a feat of endurance and sanity. You think Arkham Horror tests your sanity. You try spending 16 hours in a lockbox with a 10-year-old. She was pretty good, to be honest, but oh my God. And we got back last Friday. It's Sunday morning. We landed Friday morning. Yesterday was the Fox's birthday, so we had a little soiree. We had a little afternoon party, which was fine. It wasn't, you know, anything super gourmet, but we did have some people in the house. We had, you know, some presents and some cake. Oh, and I'll tell you what, by 7 o'clock last night, I was absolutely fucking shitted. I was rooted. I was absolutely, like, I looked like I'd been on a bender, and I felt hungover. And so again, everyone's in bed at like 3 minutes past eight, and here we are Sunday morning, and the Peanut's like in the room at like 4:05 going, Dad, I can't sleep. I'm all messed up. I'm like, all right, kid, let's just get up. So here we are, Sunday morning. The time starting with 4. I thought I'll get a coffee, and I might have to pause and go get another coffee because, you know, that's how we roll in the bunker here this time of day. And we're going to do a slightly abbreviated version because we're getting back on track. We're back in the booth. We're back doing what we love to do, we being me, because I'm just the royal Hammes. And we're going to get back on track. That's the plan. So welcome back, peeps. And off we go. Oh, one more thing. You'll note that there are ads in the podcast now. It takes a while as a new podcast to qualify for paid ads. This is something I do, you know, just in between living and life. And the ads are something that I'm just trying out. I don't necessarily need the income, but it would be nice to have a little bit that offsets the costs of running a podcast channel. Costs aren't huge. I'm not looking to retire on this or become the next Paul Grogan or, you know, Alex Radcliffe, whatever the case is. It'd be nice to have a little bit of money coming in to just offset the ongoing costs of running it. Let me know how it goes, you know, and if there's an ad you hear, you go, Jesus Christ, that's inappropriate. Send me a message because you can control what ads, what type of ads play, but there's like 1,000 things on the list to tick. And if you hear something like, you know, I don't know, ads for the latest Glock in the States, or I don't know what you're going to hear. I don't know. I don't get to vet them before they go. I get to choose what kind of ads I don't want associated with the podcast. If you hear something, go, hey, I don't think that Ham is going to be really happy to hear that, you know, where there's an ad for, oh, I can't even think. I've only had one coffee. But anyway, it's new. It's there. We're going to be giving it a go for a while and see what it looks like. If it ends up dropping 6 or 7 cents in the account every month, I'll give it away because what's the point? But if it ends up being substantial enough that it maybe just offsets the payments for the hosting and that sort of stuff, that would be amazing. Anyway, on with the show. Well, first up, we're going to do a little bit of a PlayCon wrap-up. I promised, semi-promised, I wouldn't say mildly committed to doing this with Super Trooper, but then I left the country for 3 weeks and did all kinds of other wild stuff with my job. And so I think I'm going to have to roll this one solo, and I'm going to give you the expurgated version. I don't know if that's a word. I think it's a word. I'm not going to go through every game we played at PlayCon, because PlayCon started at 10 in the morning, and it finishes at midnight, Friday and Saturday. Sunday's a slightly shorter day. And I'm not going to list every single game we played because that would be very boring, not interesting in the least. But I will give you the highlights, of which there are many. So saddle up. God, my voice is so hot today. God, I should go wake the Fox up. Charge her $3.99 a minute for a breakfast conversation. So first up, one of the ones I want to talk about is a game. And to be honest, I played... I think I played mostly... new games, all of PlayCon. You know, we played, I don't even know, 18, 19, 21 games over the 3 days. And I think, hang on, I'm going to pause and find out for you because this is interesting to me. So I paused, did the count. I played 9 games that I'd never played before. So that you can imagine the prefrontal cortex demand to learn new games, because most of them were on the heavier side. It was great. It was great because I was fucked by the end of Sunday. When I got on the plane on Monday morning, I didn't know what planet I was on. And you know, I'm not going to say I slept, because you don't really sleep when you're in that tin can. But I did kind of rest a bit, because I was absolutely annihilated mentally by the end of it. So here we go through the list. Let's kick on. So the first one I'm talking about is Five Tribes. Now, Five Tribes is basically a Mancala game. Five Tribes, you set out a bunch of tiles. It's a 6x5 grid, so the tiles are in different places every game. They're the same front and back, and you seed them with three meeples on each tile. And what you're going to do is, on your turn, you're going to pick up all the meeples on a tile, and you're going to drop them on orthogonally adjacent tiles. So if there's three meeples on there, you're going to finish three tiles away from where you started. And there are yellow, blue, white, green, and red meeples. Each one of them does something different in the game. And it's not wildly difficult to learn. Five Tribes was actually really easy to learn. And so if there are three on there, you're going to pick them up, and you're going to go to one tile over, you're going to drop one, you're going to go one tile over, you drop one. And on the last tile where you drop one, the meeple you drop, because these meeples are randomly seeded out of a bag, has to match at least one meeple on the tile where you finish. So if you pick up a red, green, and a blue, and you drop a red one on the first tile away, a green one on the second tile, there has to be a blue meeple on the third tile. Now, Five Tribes has been on my shelf of first, shelf of opportunity, shelf of shame, whatever label you want to put on it, for probably a year, because I'd seen some things about Five Tribes. I thought, that looks really interesting, I want to pick it up. So it's been sitting there, and I thought, well, guys, we're going to play Five Tribes at PlayCon. It was really easy to teach. It's a really clever mechanic, because as you take your turns, let me finish. When you get to your last tile, you pick up all the meeples of the one color, the whatever color is the last you drop. That'll be at least two, but it could be a whole lot more. Those meeples will let you do something. For example, the green meeples let you go to the card market and get resources, and resources are a set collection. The blue meeples let you score for all tiles around you of a certain type. The red meeples are assassins. They let you destroy meeples within range. The white meeples let you, they're a resource to buy stuff, and the yellow meeples are endgame points, right? And then the tile itself is going to have a little spot on it that tells you what the tile will do, and it's a little extra, not quite combatastic, but a little extra action that you can do. Further, if you take the last meeple off that tile, you get to claim it with one of your camels, and it will count for in-game scoring. It's so easy to teach. It's so easy to learn. And it's not as brain-burning as I thought. I thought, oh, this is going to get really, really hectic. It is, but also at the same time, it's really easy to grok. The whole thing's really easy to grok. So we played it four-player, and I think there was at least two of us at the end of that day said, this is absolutely the game of the day for us. Like, it was so good. It was so tight's the wrong word, but engaging, you know, and there's a lot to do on the board, and the game's over when either somebody runs out of camels or there are no more legal moves. So for example, an illegal move is if the last tile has a red and a blue meeple on it, and there's no red or blue meeple within, there's no other tiles on the board. For example, you can't drop a meeple on an empty tile. So that's, if there's no legal moves, the game's over. And then you go through in-game scoring. It's fast. There's a little bit, I won't say AP, but there's a little bit of when it comes around to your turn, you know, because the board state, certainly in a four-player game, can change quite dramatically from start to finish. So by the time it comes back around to you, there's new meeples in tiles that weren't there when you started. The tile you really wanted to grab, for example, might be gone. But at the same time, you know, it's only 30 tiles you're looking at, and it was really good. I really enjoyed Five Tribes. I want to say it was one of my favorite games of the con, but I had a lot of favorites, right? I really had a lot of favorites. So Five Tribes was excellent. I played Five Tribes with Battleships, Voldemort, and Super Trooper. And it was such a good time. It was such a good time. So that's Five Tribes. Oh, can I do all the associations today? It's so early. Let me get Board Game Geek up. One sec. Five Tribes is by Bruno Cathala, art by Clément Masson, and that's by Days of Wonder and nine other publishers. Five Tribes has been around for a long, long time. It's like 2014 or something. There are two expansions out. They're really hard to find. One really just extends it to a five-player. The second one adds one other little mechanic on the side, which is apparently really quite good. So we'll spend some time chasing it down. That was Five Tribes. Thoroughly enjoyed it. The next one I want to talk about, you may recall, if you've been listening at all, that I am a mad Lacerda fangirl. We played two Lacerdas over the weekend, and, you know, Lacerdas are a hard one to get to the table in the best of times, and if you can get them to the table at a con, it's even better. So the Lacerda we played next was the Gallerist. So I played the Gallerist with, I want to say that was with, I know it was Super True because it's his game. I would play with Project L and the Cracker, right? So the Gallerist, look, PlayCon was now like, oh man, was that 3 weeks ago? I'm going to struggle a little bit. The Gallerist, I really enjoyed. I wouldn't say it's, you know, it's probably not even in my, it's not my top three for sure. It's a Lacerda, so I really enjoyed it. But it's a little bit different in that, you know, you buy, the Gallerist is, the concept's really simple. You want to buy art and you want to buy it cheap. You want to pump the value of the artist up and then you want to sell the art later. And if you sponsor an artist, you always have, as a patron, for example, if you're the patron of the artist, you always have the ability to buy their art at quite a cheap price, and which allows you to then sort of pump that artist over and over again. Getting an artist, you know, increased in value, there's a number of ways you can do it. And, you know, I think the Gallerist was, for something that we, all of us went in, and Super Troopers played it before. So, you know, he let us down woefully because he was supposed to do the teach and he forgot how to play the Gallerist because it'd probably been 3 years, whatever. Didn't really let us down. We weren't really counting on him. We'd all had homework to do. We all had a video to watch. And the night before PlayCon, we all kind of watched the video. I remember falling asleep at the sort of 40% mark. I think Project on the Cracker watched it. We didn't have a very strong recall, so we kind of went in cold. We didn't really know how to play till about 40% of the way through the game, but thoroughly enjoyed it. I would absolutely play the Gallerist again. Look, I don't think I have the wherewithal to go too much deeper into detail. The Gallerist has been around for a long time. It's a 2015 Lacerda. And of course, that's designed by Vital Lacerda, art by Ian O'Toole, because Ian O'Toole does all Lacerda's games. It's published by Eagle Griffin Games. The production quality is excellent. The table presence was excellent. And I thoroughly enjoyed the Gallerist. I can't tell you much more about it. It was 1,000 years ago, you know, realistically. But really, really enjoyed the Gallerist. The next one was something I really wanted to play, and this was Project L's copy, and that's Endeavor Deep Sea. Now, if you've been following what's going on, Endeavor Deep Sea won the, I think it was the Kenner Spiel for the Spiel des Jahres this year. And Endeavor Deep Sea, I really, really liked, to the point where I almost went out to buy it. I didn't because Project L has it, and realistically, the only people I'm going to play Endeavor Deep Sea with would be people like, you know, Project L and the Cracker and Super Trooper, the Peanut. There's no one in this house that will play the you know, Endeavor Deep Sea. But Endeavor Deep Sea was really clever and different. And it actually, you play it and you feel like you're doing exploration, like you're a ecologist. And it's got this really clever mechanic where you've got a vertical tableau and we all start at the surface and we're trying to get down into the water. Resources are so tight, and you know, you're fighting for spaces and things on the board disappear, right? So, you know, the Cracker can go, and there's different things you can claim off the board, and if the Cracker gets there before me, then it's gone. So it's not so much a race, but it's a tableau of diminishing returns. Now, you can explore new tiles. That comes at a cost, and obviously if the tiles are further down, you have to develop your subs and whatnot so you can actually get down there without going full Titan submersible in the game. Project L has a gorgeous copy. She's got the playable copy. Endeavor Deep Sea just went through a new crowdfunding, you know, for some expansions, and I nearly pulled the pin on it because it's a trigger. I should say trigger, not pin. Pull the pins the wrong way. I nearly pulled the trigger on it because it was such a delight to play. You know, she was going to loan it to me for... to play at home. It was like, there's no chance of playing it before PlayCon because my world was mad. But Endeavor Deep Sea was excellent. Have a look at it. Endeavor Deep Sea is a 2024 publication. It's by Carlo Visser, Gerard Gray, art by Fahed Halajil, and the Marusa Gorhoop. I'm probably mispronouncing that. I need another coffee. It's by Burnt Island Games, Grand Gamers Guild, 12 other publishers. The art's great. The table presence is great. It looks gorgeous on the table. There's lots of different things you can specialize in. It's one of those games where you can't do everything. You know, there's a little sideboard with, I don't even know what it represents. It's like a little exploratory board where you get bennies and combos and all kinds of stuff. But I really, really enjoyed Endeavor Deep Sea. Apparently, the solo is excellent. So, look, I may borrow it from Project L, see how I go with that. And, yeah, watch this space. You know, I played the card the other day with my group. I said, oh, look, I don't think I'm going to buy any more games. You know, I've got plenty of games. They're like, yeah, you're a fucking idiot. There's no way you're not buying more games. So, yeah, Endeavor Deep Sea. Loved it, loved it, loved it. The evening of night one played Hansa Teutonica, which, of course, I had never played. It's another game I had never played. And shout out to Tapio, who rocks up to the table. Tapio's from Perth. He makes a trip over from Perth every year to PlayCon. Likes to rock up to the table and, you know, clean the table with us normally. He did not win this particular game. You know, it's very rare that you play a game with Tapio and you actually come out on top. And that's just because these sort of old beige Euros are his jam. They're his absolute favorite thing in the world. So we played Hansa Teutonica. That was Battleships, Voldemort, myself, Super Trooper, and Tapio. This was late in the day. I think we started this about 10 o'clock on night one. But it was excellent. It's a really easy concept. Hansa Teutonica has been around for quite some time. I'm going to have to go back to reality. No. Back to Board Game Geek. Hansa Teutonica's 2009. So, and it is the beigest of beige. It's one of those that just sits in that realm of, hey, remember a time we had board games, but we didn't have color printing? No, it was color printing. They just opted out. But that was the designs by Andreas Stedding and the arts by Dennis Lohausen. And publishers are, God, there's a number of publishers. Oh, I can't even make this out. There's quite a few publishers. It's beige of beige of beige. But the gameplay is excellent. And you're basically trying to build trade routes and networks for merchants between towns. And if you build a successful trade route, then you get to claim certain things on the board. If somebody else has a route partly built out, you can kick them off that route. Go get the fuck off the route, buddy. That comes with benefits for them, actually. They get to then replace those things that are bumped off into other spaces. So it's quite strategic in that one of the great moves you can make is to block somebody in an area where you really have no interest, but you want to get knocked into another road next door. So, because when they bump you, they have to bump you onto something adjacent to where they are. So you can actually drop your cubes and onto a route that someone else is building, and it's a bit of a fuck you. But then they could, if they want to bump you off, then they've got to bump you onto another route next door. So it does two things. It gets you into the route next door where you potentially really want to be and slows them down a little bit. It's a great little mechanic. If you claim presence in one of the cities, that every time somebody builds a route in there, because once routes are built, they reset. You build your trade route, they reset, you get the Benny, they get built over and over and over again through the game. And there are a couple of routes that just get farmed, right, for various reasons, because they unlock your ability on your player board to do bigger, better things. So there's a couple of routes that just get farmed. So if you can grab those early in the game, then you're going to get points every time someone builds a route there. Hans-Tanker was really excellent. I think, you know, there's a lot of beige of the beiges that we've played of late. El Grande is another sort of favorite of the group. I didn't play El Grande at PlayCon. There was an El Grande game going on, but largely because we just played El Grande a few weeks ago. I think of the beiges. I think Hansa Teutonica, I would play that over El Grande if I was given a choice. I'll play both, but I really enjoyed Hansa Teutonica, and I'm looking forward to playing it again. This is Super Trooper's copy. He has been sitting on that for quite a few years. It's been in his collection. He calls it Shelf of Shame because he likes to label things in a very negative way. He's a horrible human being. Shelf of First. It's called Shelf of First, guys. First. We played Hansa Teutonica for the first time. We all really enjoyed it. It was also a first in that Tapio didn't win. Sorry, Tapio. Love you. Hansa Teutonica was great. Loved it. So, after that, what do we talk about after that? We're just doing PlayCon wrap. So, PlayCon was a delight. Let's do some little filler nonsense while we're here. The guys from Board Game Barbecue, it was bigger and better than last year in that there were more games in the library. I don't think we played a single game out of the library. I can't remember. It's so long ago. I need more coffee. I'm going to have to pause in a minute and go get some more coffee. But it was seamlessly organized. Oh, and one of the delights of PlayCon, huzzah, surprise, motherfuckers. Everyone who's coming gets a free copy of Flip 7. Do you know how much Flip 7 I've played in like the last, I don't know, 7 weeks? A lot. I've played a lot of Flip 7. and everyone I've played Flip 7 with has gone straight out and bought a copy. I'm not going to talk about Flip 7 in my games that were played, because I played a shit ton of Flip 7 in the last 7 weeks. I took it to Canada. If I had taken 6 copies of Flip 7 with me to Canada, I would have paid for half my trip, because it's hard to find in Canada. I could have set up some kind of, you know, sideline auctioning game, going bid on a copy of Flip 7. So that was Hansa Teutonica. Other games we played, PlayCon. Look, we played some favorites. Played Cthulhu Wars. Played Skyrise. We played Planet Unknown. So Planet Unknown is, I think that is one of, who owns Planet Unknown? I can't remember who owns Planet Unknown. Anyway, Planet Unknown we played it 5-player. Planet Unknown is a Thailand game. It's got a great big fat lazy Susan that is woefully unnecessary, but also totally necessary. And you kind of spin it around. You choose the tile you want out of it. It's like playing Tetris. The tiles are all weird shapes. And you've got to drop that tile on your planet, and then everyone else has to pick a tile from the space that kind of stops in front of them, right? And so, you know, everyone's placing a tile every turn, but whoever's turn it is gets to choose the one they want, and everyone else has to just suck the shit that comes out of whatever groove that lands in front of them. I really enjoyed Planet Unknown. I thought it was going to be fine. I'm like, oh, Planet Unknown, that'll be good. I really enjoyed it. I think it was... It's fairly easy to teach. It's fairly easy to grok. There's a lot of stuff going on, you know, in what you can and can't play. So there's penalties of placing tiles down and benefits of placing them certain ways. And you've got little rovers that are traveling around cleaning up meteorites that hit, that are landing on your planet. Because if they're there at the end of the game, you suck. Planet Unknown was a blast. And Planet Unknown, again, let me go back to the... Planet Unknown is a 2022 game, and it is by Ryan Lambert, Adam Rayberg. Artist is Yoma. Never heard of Yoma, but Yoma did a great job with Planet Unknown, and it's published by Adam's Apple Games and 14 other publishers. So huzzah, good job, Planet Unknown. Way to go. There's an expansion that was released, I think, last year for it, and I would 100% play Planet Unknown again. No problems at all with that. I am going to pause now for caffeine. Oh, that's better. Now I've got some full caffeine going in front of me. You may hear some whirring, weird noises in the background. That is because I've had to put the heat on because it is cold as fuck in Australia this morning. So the next game we played, well, not the next game we played, the next game we're going to talk about is, excuse me, another aquatic game. This is a game that's been in my collection for, I probably bought this 2 years ago. I looked at the game 2 years ago and I thought, this looks fantastic. I love the way this looks. I love the gameplay. I love the table presence. I'm going to be honest, the table presence was very mid. It's the Vladimir Succi game. Succi. And, you know, a lot of his games, you know, they play fine, play well. I don't know. I haven't played a ton. But there, the production quality isn't always superb. This is no exception. This is Underwater Cities. Played Underwater Cities, which I bought ages ago, and there was an expansion for it, and the expansion adds this like university thing, which I've not played because, spoiler alert, this was on my shelf of firsts. Had not played, no one at the table played. I played this with Project Girl and the Cracker. But the one thing the expansion did bring was triple layered player boards, because the original player boards are the Ark Nova style player boards where it's a card and you got to put all this shit in the card. And if the Sleeve of Death comes out partway through the game, then you might as well just flip the table and go home, because you're building this underwater city with tunnels and farms and domes and all this stuff. And the original player cards that come with it, it is just it's an unfathomable nightmare. And that if somebody coughs a little bit too vigorously at the table, your game's over. So anyway, I did buy the expansion. So I bought the expansion with the game unplayed, largely because these triple layered boards, say triple layered because you're playing double layered, but the boards are also double sided and they do different things. You've got different setups on both sides. Anyway, Underwater Cities. Oh man, Underwater Cities was a good game. I was so happy to play Underwater Cities finally. As I said, I played with Project on the Cracker. Spoiler alert, it finished in a tie for Project on the Cracker. They are woefully competitive. They will go out of their way to do something just because if they do anything else, it benefits the other one of them at the table. And when I say woefully competitive, neither one of them cares if they win the game. they just don't want to lose to each other. And even then, when they lose to each other, they're totally fine with it. I think it's actually all smoke and mirrors, to be honest. It is funny as fuck. So anyway, we played Underwater Cities. And in a tie, I officially lost. I'd rather lose than win in a tie. Everybody knows that. You know, winning in a tie is not winning. It's tying as a loser. But it was great. So Underwater Cities, you've got cards in your hand. And what you're going to do is you've got a number of little, what do you call them? They're not meeples. They're like little tokens that you're going to play out on the board. It's ostensibly a worker placement game, but there's no workers per se. It's a little token that goes out. You've got spaces that you can claim and they do a thing. And the spaces are color coded. I think they're green, orange, and red. There's different sections. There's a green section, orange section, red section, and they each one does slightly different things. And you've got color-coded cards in your hand, green, orange, and red. So if you put your token down, I'm going to an orange space, you get to do it. So the orange space, you have to play a card each turn out of your hand. If the card happens to match the color of the space you're going to, you also get to do whatever's on the card. So it's a matter of sort of at the start of each round, looking at your hand and going, well, I've got three orange cards. I'm fucked this round because I can't take three orange actions. You can, but the likelihood of three orange spaces being left is not very likely. And you've got to plan out your three turns. I think it's three turns per round. And what you're doing is you've got your little blank tableau in front of you with three major cities out. Two of them do certain things. They're all randomized at the start of the game. Two of them will give you in-game benefits, and one of them is for in-game scoring. And you've got to link your network through to these cities to get the benefits. And you do that by building underwater domes and building tunnels between the domes. And then there are income phases. And during income phases, you have to have farms and labs and whatnot built around the domes. You've also got to feed people fucking kelp every round. You know, and if you don't have kelp, then it costs you points or other stuff. I did, and this is, all right, coffee. Oh, yeah, that's the stuff. I had never played the game. And to be honest, I think it's the only time other than with Kickstarters that I've done this. I went out to Etsy and I got aftermarket, beautiful little 3D printed stuff for all the resources, because the resources and tokens that come with the game are so shit, right? They're punch board, which is fine, but they're not even pretty or high quality. They're just little bits of, you might as well like cut up paper into confetti and go, plue confetti is kelp. The stuff I've got is lovely. It's really lovely, like to the point where the kelp stuff is kind of like it's 3D printed, but it's kind of soft, so you can kind of, it sways a bit in your fingers, and I've got the plasteel, which is dual layered, dual colored. It's really lovely. I really, really enjoyed Underwater Cities, and Project on the Cracker enjoyed it enough that they were like, hey, you're leaving the country on Monday, can we borrow this? I'm like, shit, yeah, take it. So they took it, they played it home, they loved it again. I will absolutely be getting Underwater Cities to the table again. It plays solo. My understanding is the solo is a bit beat your own score, but the puzzle, excuse me, is really great. Very much looking forward to getting Underwater Cities in the bunker with more people. Underwater Cities is Vladimir Suki. It's a 2018 game. Art's by Milan Vavron. It's by Delicious Games, which I believe is Vladimir Suki's company. He's got his own publishing company, or he's a partner in the company, and they basically publish all his games. So Underwater Cities, enjoyed, absolutely deluxe. Looking forward to playing with the expansion. There's a new expansion coming out this year from memory, which, to be honest, if I can get it to the table another time, you know, in the next couple of weeks, 2-3-4 weeks, I will probably pick that up, because I think Underwater Cities is really excellent. I think it's underappreciated, underplayed, all of the above. Oh, coffee's so good. So, after Underwater Cities, I want to talk about Bone Wars. Now, Bone Wars was the last game that Game Brewer did before they went, yeah, we fucked up. I want to say we fucked up. Like, I think they just overcapitalized. They undercharged. The production quality on Bone Wars is so over the top. Every token is screen printed and laminated wood. The bones are these lovely little translucent acrylic tiles. And as much as I tried, because Bone Wars was, I think, day three, it was Sunday, tried to really, really get my head around the rules before I got there. I only had about a half understanding. So big, big props to everyone at the table. Battleships played, and we played with two people we'd not met before. Shout out to Sonia. What was the name of the other gent that sat with us? I can't remember. He was a young kid. He was fantastic. And so we played Bone Wars. We muddled through it. Sonia, who turns out was a listener. Hello, Sonia. She said to me, oh, it's really amazing to be at the table with you. I normally listen to you when I'm going to bed. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. You take me to bed with you every night. That's not every night. Once a week and not for the last 7 weeks. So my apologies for sending you off on your own. It was a delight. The people at the table were a delight. We broke for dinner halfway through Bone Wars. And the other young fellow at the table, I'm going to get his name wrong. Oh, man, it wasn't Bradley. Anyway, he's a cool dude. We got back from dinner and he went, I've discovered these 7 ways in which we are playing Bone Wars incorrectly. I'm like, fuck yeah, man, hit me with it. So we were, for the second half, we played it well. We played it properly. Bone Wars, I think, was probably my favorite game of the con. And I'm not sure if that's because it was such a good game or because the company was so good. You know, and Sonia hit me with, I was like 20 minutes, about an hour in, I was just struggling. I'm like, oh man, like, what am I going to do with this? And she leaned over and she goes, what's the name of that guy in your podcast that takes way too long for his turns? That Dustin? Dusty? You're doing a Dustin. I'm like, shit, I just got Dustin. I'm like, well, okay. So, thoroughly enjoyed Bone Wars, thoroughly enjoyed the company. And very much looking forward to getting Bone Wars back to the table. I'm not even going to try to explain Bone Wars. It is a, midweight? I don't even think it's midweight. It's not super heavy. Bone Wars is a 2024 release. As I said, it was a Game Brewer production. Wim Gossens was the designer and art by Laura Bevan. Wim Gossens, I know that name. What's he done? Ah, well, he did Oak. So Oak is also on my shelf for opportunity, another Game Brewer game, which you will not be able to get your hands on. But I got the Bone Wars Uber Deluxe version. It's got lovely little tuck boxes for all the player pieces. It's got wood. It's got acrylic. All it's missing is you know, a little music box that plays music from the late 1800s. Bone Wars, I guess I should say. It's about the Bone Wars of the 1800s. There were two main paleontologists that basically did everything to discredit each other and ruin each other. You're publishing papers, you know, for your respective... You're not playing these people. You're playing other junior paleontologists that are scurrying around the countryside in the U.S., harvesting bones and publishing papers and trying to put skeletons together and trying to discredit, you know, the other one. And you can swap loyalties all the time. There's all kinds of really cool mechanics in Bone Wars. Bone Wars was excellent. I think it was one of my favorite games of the con for sure. It's a 3.95 for weight on... BGG, and I think that's about right. It's listed as 120 minutes playing time. I think maybe if you were playing three player and you'd all play before, you might get it to 120 minutes. I think we were more like 3 3/4 hours. It doesn't help that I think none of us really knew how to play the game. We were fumbling through the first bit. The second half was fantastic. And to be honest, the second half of the game took maybe 20% of the time because we knew how to play. We understood our turns. So maybe 120 minutes. I don't see it, not at four player. But anyway, Bone Wars. Outstanding. And as I said, the company at the table was fantastic. Bone Wars is probably my favorite game experience. And then on Sunday, we played a four player game of SETI. SETI I've talked about before. I think 3 and 4 are the numbers you want to play SETI at. I've talked about this before. I think SETI's a little bit broken at 2. It's actually better solo than it is at 2-player. We played SETI at 4. There's an expansion coming out this year, next year. We're in Australia, so it could be any time between now and 2029, which fixes the issues that you have with SETI at 2. And I think it looks like it's going to have some sort of Terraforming Mars prelude aspects on it, which I think will accelerate the opening parts of the game as well, which I think is great. It's not that it's tedious in the opening parts, but the whole first round of the game, you feel like you really get 4/5 of fuck all done in SETI. It doesn't make it a bad experience. The game's 5 rounds, so it's not a short game. But the first round always feels, you know, it's like that Everdell-esque resources are so tight. You know, you really don't get a lot done, and you're staring down at your PlayStation going, how the fuck am I going to get anything done in this game? You know, and you end up doing it. You end up getting it done. But I think having a little bit of a prelude, a Terraforming Mars style prelude mechanic, which just gives you a little bit of a asymmetrical boost, I think is a really clever addition. And I think is going to make it, you know, the only way to play SETI once it's out. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And then on Sunday, we got a game of one of my absolute favorite Lizards. We played Lisboa. So I didn't do the credits on setting, my apologies. But we played Lisboa, and we played Lisboa four player. And I think we had, who did we play Lisboa with? Did we have Tapio at the table for that? Oh, yes, because Tapio wanted to play Lisboa. And this was something that he kind of announced on Saturday night. He said, I'd love to play Lisboa. And so that was Voldemort, myself. Voldemort, myself, Super Trooper, and Tapio. Tapio did, of course, win. He'd never played before and he won. That's what he does. But Lisboa is by far one of my most favorite Lacerdas. Both because I think the theming is excellent and the gameplay makes sense. You know, what's happening on the board makes sense. It's the one that I could almost do a teach without the rule book. I did have to go to the rule book two or three times, but I can almost do a teach without it. Largely because it's the one I played the most. Of course, Lisboa is Triumph. Lisboa is... What year is Lisboa from? Lisboa's 2017. Lisboa's 2017 is Vital Lacerda, Ian O'Toole art. Of course, Mr. Ian O'Toole was, of course... at PlayCon, as he always is. He's a gentleman. You can always approach him and have him to sign stuff. Super Trooper had him sign something for the Gallerist, which is fantastic. And it's published by Eagle Griffin Games. And is in Lisboa. You are in Lisbon. You are... I don't know if we are. We're semi-wealthy merchants, I think, is what we are. And we're trying to help rebuild Lisboa because there was a time in the 1700s where Lisboa suffered tsunami, earthquake, and fire damage all simultaneously. And the city was in ruins, and this is about rebuilding Lisboa, and of course, making a ton of money at the time, as much as you can, to try and win the game, because winning the game gets you points, and there's really clever mechanics in there with ships and markets, and again, it's one of those where you really feel ineffective for a big part of the game, and in the last half you go, I got it. And at one point, Tapio looked up and he goes, I can see the Matrix. It was his quote. He goes, I can see the Matrix. And then he was off. And that's why we lost, because Tapio can see the Matrix. Lisboa was amazing. We played a whole bunch of other games around all this stuff. That was the PlayCon wrap. And big shout out to the guys at Board Game Barbecue. They announced at the event that next year we'll be at the International Convention Center in Sydney, which was completely foreseeable and amazing news, because it's the only venue really in Sydney that can hold more people than where they already were. And so very much looking forward to that next year. The ICC is a spectacular place to hold an event like this. I'm very much looking forward to how it evolves over the next 12 months. Shout out, guys, if there's anything I can do to help. I spent 30 years in event management. If there's anything I can do, I don't want to work it because I want to play games, but if I can help with planning, or I can, and I'll reach out and just send you a note. If there's something I can do, I'm very happy to do. Because all I want is a huge success. So that's the PlayCon wrap. Very much looking forward to PlayCon next year. The next big stop for games this year is PAX in Melbourne in October. It's just over 2 months away, and that will be an awesome time. So overseas, played a lot of lighter games because, one, we were traveling internationally, and I was at my parents', and I don't have any board game mates over there. So played a lot of Gentle Rain. So Gentle Rain was because I ended up giving it to my mom. Gentle Rain's a lovely little solo game where you're flipping tiles and placing the tiles in a tableau, and if you can match up certain patterns, then you can drop a little flower blossom in there. It's very zen. It's 2021. Played a lot of Flip 7, of course. We took Flip 7 overseas with us, and you know, I was with my sisters and their kids and my parents, and they had guests around when I was there because, you know, they like to have guests around when I'm over because I do all the cooking because I don't mind. And everyone that played Flip 7 wanted to win Flip 7, wanted to buy Flip 7. In fact, we were playing outside because, of course, the sun's up till 10:30, and we were laughing and pissing ourselves with Flip 7 to the point where I think one of my parents' neighbors called and said, are you guys okay over there? Like, there's a lot of noise going on. Played Harmonies, took Harmonies with me, much to Super Trooper's chagrin, because it's one of his favorite games, and because our bags were absolutely vomiting out Canadiana on the way back, you know, the fox went, would you like James's copy of Harmonies? Because we can't fit it in the bag. And I turned to her and I went, what? And she's like, I'll buy you another copy when I get home. I'm like, okay, fine. So anyway, I messaged Super Trooper because Super Trooper refers to Harmonies as his game in my collection. Said, look, the fox just given away Harmonies. And he went, yeah, okay. And he bought it on Amazon. It arrived that day. He's like, well, now I have harmonies in the collection, mofo, and you have to borrow it from me, which is perfectly fine with me. So we played a lot of lighter stuff, and it was great. And I got home Sunday. Oh, man, Sunday. I only got home on Friday, 2 days ago. And I went grocery shopping first so the family could have food. But I cracked open Vantage, because Vantage arrived while I was away. Vantage was delivered while I was away. And I cracked open Vantage to give that a go. I'm going to talk about Vantage another time, because I want to... It is unique. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say. I played Vantage on Friday with total brain fog and thoroughly enjoyed it. And then yesterday, before the Fox's birthday party, Super Trooper and I played a two-player game of Five Tribes, because I want to try Five Tribes at two and see how it is. Spoiler alert, Five Tribes is fucking fantastic at two. It's really, really great. So really loved it. And those are the games that were.
Boxes on the doorstep, new delights inside. Heaven's on fire, fields to divide.
Welcome to Incoming! Four exclamation marks. Oh, had a lot of deliveries come in while I was away. I was away for 3 weeks. Some were pre-orders. Some were stuff that I'd bought. Project L said, hey, I'm popping over to Games Empire. Does anybody need anything? I'm like, well, I don't need anything, but here's what I want. And so I placed an order, and she was able to drop that off. So, what's come in? So, at PlayCon, of course, Dean from Advent Games, shout out to Dean, he always brings his A game to PlayCon, and his prices are always razor sharp, because I think he knows one of the first things we're always doing is go, well, how much is this shit on Amazon, how much is it for, you know, we're always comparing, and he's very, very good at his pricing of these things. So I, it's been on my radar for quite some time. I think the presentation of it is a little bit spreadsheet the game, but the gameplay looks amazing. I picked up Shackleton Base, so looking forward to getting Shackleton Base to the table. I did order, and this is what Project L picked up for me, I did order Clank Catacombs and Clank Legacy Season 1, because the Peanut is in love with Clank, so she and I will play Clank Catacombs. I am all in on the Clank expansions that are they're available on, I think it's Kickstarter right now. And I'm hoping to get Clank Legacy to the table with Project L, the Cracker, and Super Trooper, because I know Project L and the Cracker enjoy Clank. Super Trooper hasn't played, but he likes Road to El Dorado, Quest for El Dorado, El Dorado the El Dorado. I can't remember the exact title. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm two coffees into... It's not even 6 o'clock. Oh. And then my pre-order for Kalamala, which I'm very excited about, was Kalamala the... I didn't end up getting this in Kickstarter, but I picked up at retail after the campaign. It was thanks to Gameology. They often have these games. And to their credit, very reasonably priced. So I've got Kalamala, the reprint, the deluxe Kickstarter version, which I'm very much looking forward to. And of course, as you've already heard, Vantage arrived. Vantage by Stonemaier Games, which has been seemingly quite divisive amongst players as to whether it's a good game or not. I'm going to reserve my commentary until I play a few more times. I'm on the fence of, on the side of the fence of, I think this is something really special. And shipping, arriving next Monday, is the expansion of Flock Together. More chickens, more bad guys, more chickeny goodness. So incoming's great. I don't have anything else delivering in the immediate future, but that's not too bad. That's, you know, six new games in the last 3 weeks. I'll take that, considering I'm not buying any more games. And that will do it for you. As I said, we're going to blast through some of this because I am woefully tired, you know, when the Peanut wakes you up at 6 minutes past four. Oh, boy. So that's incoming. We're going to skip FOMO this week because while I'm up to date on what's out there in crowdfunding, I like to do a lot more pre-work for FOMO Mofo guys. I like to be able to really break down pricing and my thoughts and that sort of stuff. So we'll pick that up next week. Next week on the weekend, I'll have time to do a proper episode for you because I love you all so very much. And I don't want to do a half-assed job on it. So when I do FOMO Mofo next week, we'll probably do a big bumper crop of FOMO Mofo and cover all the stuff that was on the last 3 or 4 weeks, because although the campaigns are probably done, you're going to have late pledges and pledge managers, all kinds of nonsense for that stuff. So that'll be FOMO Mofo next week. And we are going to skip through Voice in My Head because, again, I need to prepare for this stuff. And I am underprepared. The only reason we're getting this content this morning is because I happen to be up at 4 a.m. Because what you don't know is I start my new job tomorrow. So Monday morning, tomorrow, I'm off to my new job. So I've got all this stuff I got to do. I got to make lunches for the week and all this adulting shit. One star, do not recommend. However, I'm going to send the clap out to new job, new plan, new opportunities. We're going to do a clap this week. I'm starting a new job. And one of the things I'm most excited about this new job is it's only a 25-minute commute. As far as I can tell, you know, at this stage, having not set foot in the building as an employee yet, there's a lot of flexibility, which means if I like to start early because I'm up early. So if I can work like a 7 to 3, it means my evenings are free for board gaming during the week, which is amazing. So big clap. New job, new opportunities, new timeline, new capabilities to do more OMC stuff. That's very exciting. Here it is. It's not a long one, but it's a big one. Sorry. And guys, I'd like to send an open invite out. I really want to grow the OMC community, and I'm not looking at growing it from a... I don't want to run a play con. Like, that's... The board game barbecue guys are doing that the best. They're just absolutely killing it. That's not what I'm talking about. But I would like to create a wider range of, I guess... One Man Clapping, you know, affiliates. If you're interested in getting together and playing some games, send me a message. If you're in Sydney and you want to catch up, my new job should give me the freedom to do that. I'm very happy to meet up and play games. I'd like to have more people in my game group because as much as I love everyone that's in my group, availabilities are low. I am looking to have at least one day of a weekend dedicated to board gaming, you know, every week if I can. I know life gets in the way, but I'd love it. I've got this beautiful space. I've got a gazillion games. I've got time and love and passion. If you think that sounds like something you're interested in, send me a message. You know, let's have a chat because I'd love to have more people in the bunker. I'd love to really, you know, grow who's here with us and who's playing games, you know, because as much as you want to hear about Dustin and Voldemort and Project Only Cracker and myself and Battleships and Super Trooper and, you know, the Peanut and the Fox, blah, blah, blah. I want more. And as I said from the onset of this, you know, we're coming up on almost a year, which is amazing. This is not something that I'm looking to do as a job. This is my therapy session. This is what I do that makes it so that I can get through the week, and the playing board games is good for the soul, guys. And if you want to be a part of board games, if you want to come join me, if you live in Sydney, I'm on the North Shore of Sydney, if that makes a difference to you, I am happy to travel a little bit. I do like to stay around home if I can. But if you're in Sydney and you don't mind getting up towards the north end of Sydney and you'd like to play some games, and you don't mind if your name is mentioned, and we can give you a code name. You can pick whatever you like. I tend to pick them, but, you know, I'm getting freer in my old age. You can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. I'm on Instagram. You can email at onemanclapping, that's onmanclapping@gmail.com. Send me a note. And I'm looking forward to actually doing something with the BGG Guild this year. You can help One Man Clapping by dropping a like on Facebook or Instagram. Leave a review on whatever platform you choose. If it's a bad review, I won't even care because life goes on. I've got 3 daughters. They tell me I'm mediocre all the time. Let me know what you think of... Or not what you think. Ads suck. Don't let me know what you think of ads. But if you hear an ad that's not right or you find it's really ruining your One Man Clapping experience, let me know. You know, I will try and listen back on a couple of different platforms to see what kind of ads are getting dropped in there. It's a work in progress. Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you choose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. Because when you play with yourself, you know how you like it. Peace out, mofos. Ooh, not even 6 o'clock. Oh.